Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Teach Me to Talk with Laura and Kate. I'm Laura Mize, pediatric speech language pathologist.
And I'm Kate Hensler, developmental interventionist with the First Steps program in Louisville, Kentucky. How are you tonight, Laura?
I'm good, except that music nearly blew my ear off. That was...
I almost said, for those of you who couldn't hear her, she said she's Laura. Laura Mize!
I'm going to have to find the volume control on that. Woo, that was loud. Oh, that's funny. Maybe one day we'll get that fixed. At least this time it didn't stop and start. I finally figured that out, but I've got to do something with the volume. So, okay, that'll give us something new to work on for
then. There's a thought. We're pretty good at breaking in on things, though.
I don't know how to do it if I don't interrupt.
Yeah.
No, I think it's so long, it needs to just be clipped down. Johnny and I were talking about that before the show. We'll handle that, in another 6 or 8 months or so.
Well, hey, I have
right.
to say we're 1 week closer to moving into our new house. Yay.
I asked Johnny if he realized you were saying that every week. He doesn't listen anymore, and he doesn't listen to both sides anymore because he trusts what we're going to say now.
Oh, that's
and
a great thought.
He didn't realize you were that's your new tagline. So.
That's my new thing. 1 week closer. And it was
Yay. Fun
as they were finishing towel work, and we had two pretty consecutive days for a change. Spring was in the air, and it was sunny, and we walked out of our house yesterday, and we were both saying, wow, can you believe we're going to live here? Hope it happens soon. So anyway, we're very excited. Can't wait till it comes to pass.
I'm excited, too. I hope I get to go this week. I think I'm going to get to swing by there tomorrow, but I'm sure our listeners are wondering if we're going to talk about something
related to early childhood speech and language development. Well, let's do that. What do you say?
Let's do that. You know what I want to begin with in just a second is a letter from Annette that we got from last week, and Annette was one of our very first listeners who ever called in. And so we want to hear how her little boy is doing. Before that, though, I've got to make all these announcements. Thank you so much to the therapist who are inviting me and asking me through email and on the website, when are you coming to my city? And remember, I've said this on the last few shows, but in case you haven't heard that, the number one factor in determining if I go to a place for a conference is if I have a way to contact providers for early intervention services. So if you are if you are emailing me or leaving a comment on the website about that, the most important thing for me would be to get hooked up with a list that you have or even an email list or whatever so that I have a way to contact people and have enough folks that are hearing about it and interested in me coming so that I know that it will be a great conference. So I wanted to mention that, and thanks to the people that have done that, and I am working with some groups on that, so I'm so excited about that. Secondly, I'm going to until Kisha happens, I'm going to remind people that I'm going to speak at the Kentucky Speech and Hearing Association on Friday morning, February 11th, for the early session, and I would love to see as many friendly faces as possible there.
Boy,
I think those are my
corner.
Only two.
I didn't realize it was that soon, February 11th, huh?
That's next Friday, not this coming Friday,
right.
But next Friday. Yeah, it's close. It's close. I'm excited.
Yeah, cool.
The Louisville events have been good for that, have kind of getting me used to large crowds and familiar faces, which the first Louisville event made me have all those nerves, but I settled down, and this last Friday was great, minus the nerves. So that'll be exciting for Kisha.
Right.
All right, enough about those kinds of announcements. Let's move on to this letter from Annette to catch us up on Jake, and then we have two great questions for tonight that I don't think we've talked about these kinds of things in the last few months, so it'll be interesting to visit those topics. But first, let's do Annette's update. She says, Laura and Kate, congratulations on your 100th episode. What great milestones we've all reached in the last couple of years. It seems like just yesterday that Jake and I were getting started on our journey, and if you'll remember, Jake's the name of her little boy, and so were you on your website and your DVDs. Wow, time sure has flown by. You were my driving force and comfort zone when I needed answers about moving on to the next level of Jake's development. Your expert advice and child-friendly techniques helped me and so many other people. She says, a bit of history, and this is what will be interesting for moms that are just now listening and who may not have listened then, or it might jog some memories of therapists who have been longtime listeners. But she says, a bit of history. When Jake was around 19 or 20 months old, he lost communication, social interest, and seemed to withdraw inside himself. I was searching for answers because I thought it was autism. He showed so many red flags, I had to act fast. We introduced supplements, Dr. Greenspan's floor time therapy techniques, and he received early intervention through a private organization for speech therapy. The speech therapist techniques and drills weren't really working, so I had to find a better way. After discovering your website and DVD series, I applied your techniques and got instant results. I shared the wealth of knowledge with Jake's therapist, and they all agree what a difference it made. When he was 30 months old, we discovered several medical issues that could hinder his communication and social skills. He had his tonsils and adenoids removed, ear tubes put in, and his tongue clipped. Oh, poor baby. That was a lot for one
Hopefully
kid.
Hopefully they got
it?
To do the one-stop shopping approach, and they could do them all at once. Sometimes
I hope they
that
did.
Happens, yeah.
Yeah, I kind of remember that. I remember her talking about that. And then she says, after these procedures, I continued using your techniques to help him regain communication and enhance his social skills. I attribute his success and recovery to your website, personal responses, and being able to see your techniques in action on your DVDs. I don't know what we would have accomplished without your help. He now sees a speech-language pathologist through the school system, and she is wonderful.
Yes.
I have to tell you what I know. I'm so glad to hear that. She says, I have to tell you what happened recently with her. She works with him on articulation, and again, articulation for our listeners who don't exactly aren't familiar with that term, that's getting all the right speech sounds in the right places. She says she was stunned when he came into class one day with perfect L's after months of working on this sound. She said, phew, I didn't think he'd ever get it. And then she also said, I wish all parents were like you and worked with their child. It really made a difference. You've done a great job. I owe a lot of that to you, Laura and Kate, for giving me the information I needed and showing me great techniques to overcome this major obstacle. The whole family joined in watching the DVDs and using your techniques. My favorite one is, I was shocked about this. She says her favorite one is teach your child to listen and obey too. Because she said getting the siblings involved makes the kid feel part of playtime, not therapy time. Nobody's ever told me that's their favorite one, so that's kind of funny for me to hear.
Hmm.
And then she updates us about Jake. She says, Jake turned 5 in December. His communication is awesome. And, you know, 5 to you and me, that's old, isn't it?
Yeah.
Dr. Rossetti said that's like geriatrics by the time they're coming in kindergarten. And that's kind of how we feel because we think they're big when they're 3 and it's their birthday and we're sending them on their way. So 5, ooh, that's old.
Yeah.
She said he expresses dreams, wishes, and can tell us pretty complicated stories of how his brain had wiring problems when he was little. Aw, that's so cute he can articulate that. His words, not mine. He tells us about the things he remembers when he couldn't talk. He could absorb and understand things back in those days. He just couldn't let us know it. He is making up for it now. He's always interrupting us with something to say. The parenting newsletters I get are wonderful reassurance because he is now hitting the milestones on time or early. And boy, I'm sure lots of moms listening to this are dreaming of the day that every time they read something that their child should be doing with communication, that they're not feeling upset by that information and feeling like, you know, oh, is he ever going to catch up or even be ahead like Jake's little, or like Jake is now. She says, most people don't realize how many stages of development are connected to communication. He's a typical 5-year-old now. What a relief that is. And it's so nice to refer to his communication disorder as those days. So that's so nice that he has caught up and that she is looking back on all that fondly now because she was pretty darn worried about him.
Right, early on. When we first talked to her, I remember, that was when I was kind of nervous because one of our first callers, and she...
I know.
She's fun, real animated mom person anyway, but you could tell she was very committed to it and very nervous about it. And all that hard work sounds like it has paid off.
I know. And, you know, that is really best case scenario. And while we are realistic and know that doesn't happen for every single child we see, it does happen for lots of children who are in early intervention. They catch up. Now, she goes on to talk about she's concerned about him learning how to read and write, and she's concerned that his speech sound issues may impact that. And, you know, the truth is it might. He might go on to have reading problems, because we know from research and just from our personal experiences with children that so many times when you have difficulty getting all the right sounds in the right places and you're a late talker and learning how to talk, you might struggle with those higher level reading and writing skills, since those are really just the same kinds of input and output. You know, and a lot of moms will say, you know, if you have a kid who had problems with comprehension, he's going to have trouble with reading comprehension. And if he had problems with expressively, he's going to have difficulty writing and getting those ideas down. And lots of our little guys do still struggle with that advanced fine motor control, so that their handwriting looks sloppy. They may still have, you know, lots of difficulty with letter formation, and certainly that's not every child who's been late to develop communication skills, but we do know that being late automatically puts those kids at risk for later academic problems, and Annette is realistic about that. She says he's come a long way, but boy, we've got these next new hurdles. And that, I guess, you know, that's just, I love that she's that realistic, and she's not necessarily saying every struggle he's ever had is behind us. It's smooth sailing from here on out. You know, what parent can realistically say that about any kid?
Right.
But I love how positive she's been, though, about all the progress that they made. And certainly shared the story of that it was a family effort working with him with his communication challenges, and just how proud they are of him now. But they're anticipating if anything else comes up, we will just, you know, work on it and do what we need to do to give him the extra help he needs. But that was such a nice update for Brian.
Very nice.
I really appreciate that. Really appreciate that. Do you have anything more to say about that?
No, just that thrilled to hear he's doing so well. And if I know Annette, we'll probably hear from her again. So, which is a good thing. I don't mean that in a negative way. She's just so fun. So anyway, great job,
Annette.
We're proud of you.
I know. She's done such a good job, and I do hear from her regularly. She's my friend on Facebook, on my regular Facebook page.
See?
So she's one of my online friends that I do feel like I know, even though I've never, ever met her in real life. So I'm sure we'll get more updates. So that's exciting. That's my favorite part of Christmas, and I think I've said this on the show before these last several weeks, is getting Christmas cards from former little clients, you know, that are in school now and 7 or 8, or, you know, and some of them, I look at their pictures and I would never even recognize them if I saw them at, you know, somewhere at Target or, you know, another community place. So it's so exciting to hear how they're doing and hear that they're making friends and talking and going to sleepovers and birthday parties and all of the exciting little things, and are getting to participate in that, because so many times moms are so afraid of the lifelong implications that a communication delay can mean. And so it's so exciting for me to get the success stories, even if kids might continue to have some little academic difficulties. Again, usually the stories that we hear are more positive. And even our kids that are really severely impacted and still might struggle with communication and speech-language issues for a long time, they still end up having lots of those normal little experiences like making friends and things. So it's always so exciting to hear and see them and watch them as they grow year to year.
Right. Also to see, a lot of times the moms, you know, we're kind of early in the process normally, between 2 and 3 or a year and a half and 3, and a lot of times the mothers have really gone through, kind of a transition or a metamorphosis where they've moved on to being kind of really proactive and just much
right. More
comfortable with the whole process. So it's nice to kind of see it come full circle where everybody's doing pretty well, even if there's still some things they're dealing with. Everybody's
right.
comfortable and not, you know, it's not consuming them anymore. They're dealing with it, so.
and go on and have other children who most of the time don't have any issues, and you get to hear about those kinds of things too. And more often than not, a lot of the moms that I keep up with end up being support for other moms with children
right.
going through similar circumstances. So it's so nice to kind of see that big circle and see them be able to get back and think, oh, I had a little part in that. You know, you the things you're saying now, I remember talking to you about that same thing. So it's
right.
that's rewarding too.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's exciting. All right, moving right along. Another great mom has written a letter, and again, this is someone that I've never met before. She's just emailed me, and her name is Amy. Her daughter's name is Alexa, and this is a question that I don't remember us talking about recently on the show. But that doesn't necessarily mean anything. Who knows? We could have discussed it last week. I don't remember. But anyway, here goes. She says, my daughter Alexa has just turned 26 months old and speaks less than is typical for her age. She's on target or ahead on all other developmental milestones and does not exhibit signs of autism. She is social, engages in pretend play, and gets her point across without using words much of the time. She's even figured out sign language for hug and kiss without our help. She's been tested for hearing and vision due to her having Goldenhar syndrome. Is that right? Goldenhar? Is that how you pronounce that?
I don't know.
Because I've never treated. Yeah,
nope.
I've never treated a kid with this syndrome.
No, me neither.
But it really is. It's. Did you have a chance to look it up?
No.
It's where you have mostly facial deformities. And again, I haven't seen a picture of this little girl. I don't know how. Impaired, for lack of a better word, or how affected would be a better word. I don't know how affected she's been, but it mostly involves deformities of the face, so that sometimes there's an ear missing, sometimes, you know, there's just some asymmetry from one side of their face to the other. Some of those children go on to have developmental delays. I think it said about 15% could be classified as cognitively impaired or mentally retarded is the older term that we use for that. And so, again, the majority of those children do have normal intelligence. Sometimes their articulation is affected if their mouths, if physiologically their jaws and lips and tongues, but it's mostly a bone issue if those parts of our face that are required to produce intelligible speech sounds are affected, of course, they would likely have intelligibility problems as well. So that's kind of the history on that. And again, I'm not an expert on that. I've never treated a kid with that. I just sort of remembered what it was and then just looked it up to be sure and glanced at it for maybe, 2 minutes before I responded to this mom. So if I'm misquoting something, sorry about that, but that's the general kind of my Reader's Digest condensed version of what that syndrome is. And she says,
well,
she was also about
so many syndromes. It would be,
yeah.
Even a geneticist isn't an expert on every syndrome, so I don't make
right.
I mean, I do what you do. Typically, I look it up and get the basics and move on.
Well, and this is the other interesting thing that I talk about in the conferences, and it's so true. As professionals in early intervention, we don't really treat Goldenhar syndrome. We don't really treat autism. We don't really treat Down syndrome. We treat the developmental domain that's been delayed or affected by that, and in this case, she's asking about communication. So in one sense, it doesn't really matter what the diagnosis is or if there's a diagnosis when we even get a kid, because we're not really looking at that, because there's not really a treatment for each kind of syndrome per se. We're looking at overall a kid's developmental level and where that kid is. So again, that's why that doesn't really matter, and why that's good for us as professionals, because we don't have to know every little thing like that. We're just looking at where a kid is with language or with whatever. If you're an OT, you're looking at their fine motor and their sensory processing systems, and you don't have to know every little thing about every little syndrome, because you're looking at developmentally where they are. So anyway, I'll move on. She says she was also evaluated for speech due to her Goldenhar at 12 months, and they didn't believe she had a defect, but they did think that she could be babbling more. However, that was only a 20-minute session, so I'm not sure if it was representative or not. So she's 26 months old, and that happened at 12 months. And at 12 months, they felt like she was on target. She says she did fill out a 24-month evaluation to see if she qualified for the state screening, but the response was that she knew too many words because she has 75 to 80 words and that she had to be 30% behind her age group in speech, but's required to get an evaluation. So she did not qualify for that according to whatever the criteria is for whatever state she lives in. And this is what she goes on, goes on to say about her speech. She says she generally says the first syllable of words when repeating, but she's capable of saying more. When she gets frustrated, she may use the whole word like baby. And then one day when I asked her where her toothbrush was, she responded bedroom and ran to get it. She previously said Birdie and Brady, her brother's name, and doggy with both syllables since 12 to 14 months old, but she's quit doing it now, and now she uses the shorter version. Most of the time she just says meh for milk and paw for potty. And let me just stop right there and say she's really kind of talking about two different things, because leaving off the ending sound for milk really is pretty typical for lots of kids until they get closer to three. But just saying paw, which would be the first part of the first syllable of the word potty, is a different issue, because then she's leaving off that whole last syllable. And then she goes on to say she certainly has some stubbornness and funny little personality, so I'm puzzled as to how much of her limited speech is her choice versus capability. She works hard to say words like juice and has a good pronunciation in those words she says completely, much better than my son, who was an earlier talker but had more lisping, et cetera, at this age. And then she's asking me which DVD she thinks might be helpful for her, and if I thought she should go see someone in private practice since she's not qualifying for her state program. She says, I don't want her to fall behind or get frustrated, and so many people say she'll learn on her own, and maybe she will, but I don't want to ignore an issue if she needs help either. I'd appreciate any insight you can provide. So I think this is a great question, and I don't remember us talking about this recently. So I was excited to get this question.
Right.
All right, you want to go first, Kate, or do you want me to?
You go ahead, and I'll chime in.
All right. I wrote her back already and said, I love your question. We're going to talk about it on the podcast. So, Amy, I hope you're listening. She did not want to call in. Try to get her to call in. I don't know why she couldn't, but she said she wouldn't be able to do that. So I hope she's listening so she can hear what we're us really talk about this more so than I was able to just give her a written response. When kids can't say two-syllable words, like they're just, like she says, paw for potty, or did she give us another example of what she couldn't do? Not really. She just said that she does say some words like juice, but usually she leaves off even like a K, and remember I've already talked about that's different with leaving off an entire syllable. When they leave off syllables like that, sometimes it really is because there's a motor planning component, meaning that she can't always sequence two syllables together. And that's harder to do than just saying one syllable. And for mama, the one syllable of a word like mama would just be ma. And a lot of kids will say ma, but their moms think they're saying mom, and they're being really mature and leaving off the, oh, he's not doing baby talk, he's going straight to words, when big boy words, when really sometimes it's that he can't do that second syllable, and the mom just kind of hears that extra M on the end when it may or may not be there. So moms will say that a lot, that they won't really realize that this is really kind of a sequencing issue. It's interesting that she says sometimes, and it sounds to me like, Kate, this is one of your
my
examples.
My level of arousal?
Yeah.
That's what I thought.
Yeah,
of
where the, yeah, because she says that when she gets frustrated, meaning when she's mad, she can pop out the whole word, but she doesn't do that normally. And usually in this kind of situation, it's linked to, again, a motor planning issue, meaning that she knows the word she wants to say probably in her little brain. She just can't really send that complete word or plan and send it on as smooth a path or as completely accurate as it should be before accurately to get to your little mouth. And again, that is a very layman's explanation of motor planning. I don't want to get any nasty grams from anybody talking to me about understanding neurology. I'm just trying to explain it in everyday language. So, but what's really going on is she's probably having difficulty with that. In my little two-minute hurried trying to look up her syndrome to see if motor planning was a part of that, where they anticipated that children would have difficulty with that, I did not find anything about that in my very brief examination of the characteristics of that syndrome. So it doesn't necessarily mean that many children with her particular syndrome would have this issue, but in my mind, lots of children have this issue, and especially with the lots of kids that are late talkers. So that doesn't necessarily mean that just because she has this other syndrome, she wouldn't also have difficulty with motor planning too. It also, does she say in here somewhere that she doesn't repeat very much?
Not that I recall you reading, or when I read it, I didn't.
She might have said that in a later email, because she did email me back.
Right.
And that really, the motor planning issue, that really is particularly true with children who don't always imitate. And she said she was still pretty quiet at 12 months. She wasn't really making as many sounds and babbling as much as the evaluator would have liked. Not that it was totally absent, but just that it wasn't as prolific as the speech-language pathologist who evaluated her wanted to be. So she's already got a couple of little things in her history that might make me think, okay, this could be a motor planning issue. However, she seems to compensate for that because she's already got a lot of words. She said she already knows 75 to 80 words. So again, she's 26 months. Minimally, at 24 months, we want children to have 50 words. So she's above that little minimum kind of cutoff there. So I can totally see why a state program might not consider her eligible. And I guess that Goldenhar is not one of the diagnoses that would automatically qualify you for services in her state. I don't know if it is in Kentucky either. We have a pretty big established risk list that if you have a medical diagnosis that predisposes you to communication difficulties, you automatically qualify regardless of whether you're actually exhibiting a delay or not, because our state program understands that there's considerable risk for that, and they want you to have the benefit of services. But certainly in this day and age of all the states that have budget crises, that criteria may start to be whittled down, even for pretty generous states like ours. So she didn't automatically qualify just because of that that diagnosis. But anyway, back to what she can and she can't do. I would start with those two-syllable words, and again, words like mama, bye-bye, da-da, no-no, or animal sounds, so that she can really practice with those easy patterns. And again, words like that would be easier because the second syllable is the same as the first syllable. And those kinds of words are really an early, those are early patterns. Those are the kinds of things that we see in the normal vocabularies of typically developing 12-month-olds. So again, we're using what we know to be true about typical development, and we're looking at what would be the easiest kinds of words for her to practice that pattern of sequencing two syllables in a row. And so that's the first idea that I would give her for that. The second thing I asked her is, because she has enough words, 75 to 80 words, we know that children typically begin to combine words into phrases at that 35 to 50 word vocabulary size. I asked her if she was doing any phrases, and she said, this is in the next email, that she did occasionally use really early ones, like bye-bye daddy or hi Daisy, and Daisy is her babysitter's dog, and she's usually does it when, well, she only does it if she's prompted, but she doesn't always do it even when she's prompted. And so my advice to her is that I would really work on two-word phrases using the familiar words that she can already say in her established vocabulary, like putting a word with juice. If she already says please, you know, juice please or more juice. If she already does bye-bye dada, I would try to get it with bye-bye mama, bye-bye Daisy, bye-bye any brother or sister names. and work on her phrases first, because sometimes giving a child that extra word there makes them more likely able to get that syllable there, because just on a conceptual level, they know they're trying to put two things together, and then they're more able to be able to sequence that, because it kind of gets over that little hump of, I can't put that next little part in there. So I told her that's what I would work on first, those easy two-syllable words, and then move on to those two-syllable phrases, because she has enough words in her vocabulary to be able to do that.
Two-word
phrases.
Yeah, okay.
And then the next thing I said is, if she can't do a lot of those, kind of back it up a little bit and practice on that in-between step that lots of kids need. And again, this is from the apraxia literature, that to make it easier, instead of doing a word or a phrase where the syllables aren't the same, like more milk, you know, more and milk have different vowel sounds there. And that would make it harder for a kid to be able to do. If a kid can't do a lot of those two-word phrases in imitation, then you kind of back up and work on the sequencing piece, where you're just going to say the same word, and we call that one-word sequences. And so that instead of counting as you're going up the stairs, you might just stick to up, 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 or down, 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 down. I like when I'm running with the kid to say go, 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 because lots of kids like to say that, and that's kind of a fun thing to do. So you're practicing the same word repetitively, and you're learning that sequencing piece. And again, it's easier for a child to do because it's just one little syllable, and the same little consonant vowel or vowel consonant repetition as you're going, just using that same word over and over. And lots of children do need that in-between step, practicing the same word sequentially before they're able to move on to do some of those phrases. So those were the three big ideas. And whenever I get a kid like this, one of those three things usually works to kind of help them make that leap and get over that hump so that they can move on and be able to do multisyllabic words or two-syllable words, and then move that on to phrases. So those were my ideas. I also told her that the DVD that would be best for her would be Teaching Me to Talk with Apraxia and Phonological Disorders, and she can see those three strategies with lots of children and see how to facilitate those with her little girl. And those were kind of my starting points. Any comments about those, Kate?
Well,
take a drink.
I guess I would say it seems like with kids I've seen, and I certainly have seen quite a few kids over the years who I either was convinced or suspected they were apraxic or had motor planning problems related to speech. A lot of times it does, I seem to think they benefit from that repeating the same word, no, 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 more, 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 more. Mine, 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 up, 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 because
right.
it's why I don't know why I use these analogies, because I'm hardly an athlete, but I always kind of say, like, well, it's like you're getting ready to run a big marathon, and you've got to stretch, and you've got to warm up, and you've, and, you know, and for kids who appear to be apraxic, that does seem to be the case, and it's a big, big jump, you know, just to
right.
go a single word to a two-syllable word, and from one word utterances to two word utterances, and that in-between step can really be kind of the necessary warm-up that they need to bump up to two word phrases. So I would say yes, that's a great, great suggestion. I mean, they're all worthwhile, and as you say, normally one works. It seems like a lot of kids, that's where kind of my go-to thing, if I think, okay, we've been doing the single word thing here for quite a while. The other thing I would say, and I don't know that you kind of alluded to this, Laura, when you talked about, you know, because I always seem to be the one who talks about that heightened level of arousal and how they have to be really mad, really excited, or really scared, and I always go with really excited, as do you. But that kind of relates to, Amy was kind of asking, did we think, she didn't know if that was her personality, that sometimes she will,
right.
she won't. I would suggest no. It's probably not her personality. It has more to do with her level of arousal, and when she's mad, things are flowing more rapidly. You know, she's got lots of adrenaline going, and it's the same thing when she's excited and same thing when she's scared. And it's just kind of biology that her system works a bit more effectively at that time, and that's why those words pop out then. It's not a choice, not a conscious choice she's making. Not to say that I don't believe her child doesn't sometimes make a conscious choice to respond or not respond just the way that all children do, but when I see that with kids, I mean, we know from so much time in the trenches that having them excited is our best case scenario for getting a kid to be able to verbalize in any way. So I would say maybe occasionally her child makes a choice not to, but, you know, just to me it says a lot that she's identified, well, when she's mad, and I would
she can pop it out then.
Yeah. And when she's scared, I'll bet it's true. And when she's excited, I'll bet it's true. That is just when our systems seem to work. It's the fight or flight thing. And when we're juiced up, that's when things, poop, you know, that's when it comes to you. And that's when her words come more easily. So when she sees your DVD, she'll see that's, you know, your approach is to be very animated, very engaging, because you want the child excited. You want the child really having a great time
connected
with you, connected with you, and really kind of jazzed up or juiced up or whatever the term would be, very, very excited. And that's what, you know, that's what we know works. So she'll see. And I don't know Amy. She seems like a great mom. I don't know what approach she's taken with her child in the past, but I think she'll have an appreciation for just how animated you are during sessions once she sees the DVD. And if she implements that, I think she'll see that same mechanism working for her daughter that works when she's mad. It'll work when she's excited. And then she'll believe me when she sees, yeah, maybe it wasn't a decision. Because a lot of times with kids in therapy sessions, even though I've done it a long time, when I'm getting, she's kind of described a scenario that I don't know that you read, Laura, but in the second, her response when they ask her something, sometimes she just looks away. And I think moms kind of read, and I'm not saying that sometimes it couldn't certainly be a behavioral, a personality. You know, kids have personalities, don't we all know that? And she may sometimes be making a choice not to respond. But sometimes I would suggest that she can't respond. She's not on her game enough. She's not excited enough. She's not excited. She's not mad. And she's not scared. And what she thinks is, if we could put words to that look away, yeah, I get what you want. I can't do it. And they and when I'm in a session and I'm not getting what I've gotten in the past or what I think I should be getting, my first go-to thing is to use your words, Laura, and I always do, ratchet it up. Sometimes if I think, Johnny's not really performing today the way he has in the past or the way I think I, you know, my instincts tell me he should, if I'll bump up my energy level, if I'll be more animated, more playful, more goofy, more fun, all of a sudden, he's gotten better. You know, words are coming a bit more easily. He's responding more on cue. So anyway, I think she'll see that, and then I think she'll understand what I mean when I say, a lot of it has to do with where they are, how they're functioning, what their arousal level is. And so if she implements your strategies that she sees in the DVD, I think she'll have more success because she'll know how to get her daughter to that heightened level of arousal that really she needs in order to perform at maximum level, you know.
Yeah, and the new video I just added for the Louisville conferences of my little friend Kelly that I've been seeing, I've just been seeing her since August, and the new video from the conferences really highlights that, because she is having lots and lots of difficulty getting those two-word phrases together, and then the clips are so cute because early in the session she can't do the two-word phrases, but we play and we have fun and kind of get her going a little bit. And then she's really kind of right there with me. And then I started modeling in a really excited way those holistic phrases. I did it right there, in there. And she was able to pop those out like nobody's business. She had never been able to do that before, but you do just almost have to get kids to the right spot. And that doesn't always happen, even in the first 5 or 10 minutes of a session. It's sometimes those things, those two-word phrases in those, and again, speaking specifically to what this little girl's having difficulty with, she may be able to do single words fairly easily, but to be able to sequence those two things together, they have to be really in the right place, and sometimes for me, that'll take a good 30, 35, 40 minutes of really playing with the kid and getting them really kind of hyped up so that they are really ready to do it. And then when the adult really models it in that heightened, that heightened emotional response, that, you know, animated and, you know, I did it, I got it, where'd it go? There it is, right there. When you're modeling like that, and then you're holding your arms up in the air to say, I did it. That sometimes, works like magic to get a two-year-old excited enough to be able to pop that out too. And so I'm not sure. I think in the Apraxia DVD, there are great examples of that, too. That was 2 years ago. I can't remember which particular child might have done that, but I'm sure that's on there.
There are, Laura, because you use that approach all day in real life.
That's normal.
Sure they're in there. But the other thing I suggest is for some kids,
go ahead.
Movement can also play a part in that. Sometimes we can get it with just us being very playful, very animated, very
woohoo!
Yeah,
very
over
woohoo!
The top. We have to be hyper, but sometimes for some kids, and she doesn't really say much about her little girls, you know, that anything necessarily relates to this, but for some kids, and oftentimes it's boys, sometimes girls, sometimes when I'm working with a child and I'm being as animated as I can and I'm doing, I've ratcheted it up all I can ratchet it up and it's still not working, I will think, okay, I'm going to put these toys down and we're going to do Ring Around the Rosie and we're going to march and we're going to jump and we're going to catch balloons and we're going to pop bubbles and I'm going to tickle them because they really need that movement component. Perhaps
OTs
and OTs of the world could tell us why. I just know that is for some kids a necessary part of the formula, particularly early on when it is very difficult for them. And
right.
If everything I'm doing isn't working, that's when I say, okay, time to get their little bodies moving, because that plays a part for a lot of kids in unlocking language. So that's one other thought you might think about.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea, too. And if this mom needs ideas for that or any other mom and you're not sure what we're talking about, Teach Me to Play With You is my therapy manual that has written instructions for lots of those little games. And so if you need some ideas to help you be a little bit more creative with those kinds of things, or you're more of a black and white kind of person and want some instructions, the manual is just full of those ideas. So that would be a good idea for you to be able to read those and implement those. And the other thing the manual does is it gives you what to say when you're playing those little games, because establishing those verbal routines, as Dr. Rossetti says, and he's a famous speech pathologist from University of Wisconsin, and he did the Rossetti Infant Language Toddler Scale, which is a test that many, many speech pathologists use all over the world to evaluate children's communication skills birth to three. And he says the number one thing that parents can do to help a child learn language is really implement verbal routines all day. And we do these things when we're playing with a kid, when we say things like ready, set, go. And children hear that over time, and they know what to say before long. If other parts of their little developmental systems have come into maturity, they're popping out that word go because they've heard it enough, they can say it, they know it goes there. And sometimes I think even before a kid even means to say go, he just says it.
Right.
And usually it is in those movement kind of games that we've just talked about. So if she needs some help with that and isn't sure What Little Routines to Use, Teach Me to Play with You is a great resource for that as well. And all those things that we keep talking about, I haven't said that they're available on my website at teachmetotalk.com. If this happens to be someone's very first show to tune into, I've got a whole website full of ideas for parents and for therapists with lots of articles, and certainly my DVD series and then the book are on there. So if you want to be able to see this kind of therapy with a child and get some ideas, those would be good resources. But I'm thinking that once Amy sees the DVD and kind of it doesn't sound like she's even had therapy.
No.
Even OT or PT.
On the other hand, it does sound like her mom is very much a hands-on, take charge, very involved, very. So,
right.
You know, she hasn't had formal therapy, but I think Amy is.
Yeah, I do
too. Probably could, you know, I mean, I'm thinking she's a really, really involved, focused mom, which is wonderful. My point is, I think Amy works with her a lot because she's so.
Oh, so do I.
Chewing and.
Oh.
So she hasn't had formal therapy, but she sure has had a mom who's been focused on her development. So, and as we know, at the end of the day, that's the most important thing. So.
It is, and those are the kind of moms that really benefit from seeing the DVDs because sometimes they just think, oh, my gosh, if I had known how to do it this way, you know, okay, this is not rocket science here. I can act like this. I can do
well,
this.
Just like Annette was three years ago or whatever. Yeah, and that, for me, I mean, I could certainly read things and get the idea, but, Laura, I don't think even I would have – I mean, I didn't need to see the DVD because I saw you in real life many years ago, but, you know, I've said on the show before – once I accidentally crossed paths with you in a session and I saw how you really amped it up, I thought, oh, I thought I was already doing that. But I realized, no, it's really, it's so second nature to me now. But looking back, and that was probably 8 years ago or 9 years, it was a long time ago that I thought, that's what she means. Okay. And, you know, initially, and this is one of your buzz lines from way back when, if you don't feel kind of goofy doing it, it's not anime, it's not goofy enough, not animated enough, or so. I'm paraphrasing, but that's the idea.
Yeah.
So, and seeing it really, you know, and just go ahead and use the same routines, the same little games, the same, you know, just copy it. That's the way to get there the fastest. So I think Amy will benefit greatly from the DVD and seeing it. Not that I don't know what approach she has now, but I don't think many normal moms really use that approach until they see it.
I think so, too. And then I think once you see it work, not just with one kid on the DVDs, there are lots of children, and you can see that's really effective with the most every kid, no matter what's going on, whether it's a syndrome that's already been diagnosed or whether it's just a little language delay or a little motor planning problem or they might already have, you know, again, a big diagnosis like autism. The great thing about that is those strategies aren't dependent on what exactly is wrong with you or wrong with the kid or the reason. It's addressing communication, and it's addressing it in a developmental way, and it is kind of based on those neurological principles of I'm going to respond more to novelty that kind of becomes familiar, the whole sing-song voice with apparent ease. You know, research tells us that's what kids pay attention to. That's what their little brains are kind of hardwired to seek out. That's what works. So seeing that sometimes is different than reading it. And you have really convinced me, too, over these past few weeks with me getting ready for these conferences in our hometown here, that sometimes people really don't even realize when they're not doing it the way that you think it could be better. And so, again, to kind of see an example is sometimes the best way to do that. Some people can't do it from reading it. And sometimes even after seeing it, people still need that extra tool of, okay, tell me exactly what to say. And so that's where the therapy manual kind of came
in. Well,
and
the manual has so much more detail that, I mean, if you did a whole DVD of the manual, it'd be a five-part series. There's a lot of detail in that manual. But just the basic, you know, how playful are you? How animated are you? That, and then, you know, your basic approach, but the manual is very specific about exact scenarios and words and what you do, and, I mean, it's
and try, if it doesn't work, try this.
Right.
Yeah. So that'll be good. All right, let's move on. Poor Marie is the next mother, and we only have 11 minutes to address her question, but I think this one was shorter anyway. It says, hi, Laura, do you have any tips for what to try when a child has many signs but is not yet using a lot of words, with the signs or otherwise? Thanks in advance for your time. And she says, and your website and DVDs are amazing. So apparently she's already got the DVDs, and she's already implementing lots of those things, but she's still not hearing lots of words. And when I have this happen with a kid, and as I talk about in the conference, which I'm not going to do, sometimes I feel like when we're doing the podcast now, I'm just quoting directly from the conference, and I don't want to do that. But at the conference, I really talk about the hierarchy that we need to follow as speech-language pathologists, and it's based on typical development and based on what we know about how kids kind of mature socially and cognitively and with language and neurologically and how they kind of all mature and come together. And sometimes kids aren't ready for words yet. You've got to start way back, not at the sound level, but at words that are play words, and again, that are more exciting and more novel and more fun, so that kids are going to want to imitate those. So my guess would be that they have lots of, this little kid probably has lots of functional signs, but she's just not really there yet as to being able to imitate all those big words. And so Marie, her mom, needs to start back with little exclamatory words that, again, work with the, like we just talked to the mother about before, using that heightened level of arousal where she's, you know, saying, yay, and wee, and doing some animal sounds and doing car noises and those kinds of things. If she's still not able to do it from that, back up a little bit and try to get her to do more actions with her mouth that are not words yet, like air kisses, like pretending to kiss or kiss a toy, or maybe pretending to be kitty cats and lick, or fake cough, fake sneeze, fake laugh, fake snore, all of those little sounds, so that she's still imitating with her mouth. But again, it's a little less complex than being able to use or imitate a real word. So she needs to back it down a little bit and start there with what she could do, because the child can already, we know she can imitate because she already has a lot of signs. So she's just got to make it a little harder than imitating actions with her hands, but a little less difficult than imitating full-blown traditional words with her mouth. So she's got to kind of get to that in-between step. And lots of therapists skip over that and don't really realize that sometimes there might be weeks or even months of a kid needing that kind of practice before they're ready to move on and do full-blown words. Lots of times those are associated with children with motor planning issues. To hear us talk some nights on the show, Kate, you would think that we think every kid is apraxic that we see. And
but
that probably is overstating it slightly.
Signs, and she doesn't give a number to the signs, does she? But she says a
no.
lot of signs. And, yeah, words I would add to those early exclamatory words, ones that I use routinely are uh-oh. I always do uh-oh early on.
Mm-hmm.
I do boom a lot, especially with
mm-hmm.
boys, but also with girls. I think you did yay. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
those are kind of, and those are typically, they will get those. And those are those kids who they are, you know, comprehension-wise or receptive language-wise, they're with you. They're ready to talk, but motor planning-wise, they are not ready to talk. And normally
right.
you can get them on those either animal sounds or those early exclamatory words. And I do all those other things. I see, and sometimes I don't even understand really the rationale for why I do them, but like
right.
you said, if you can get them to try and blow, try and kiss, I do a lot of open your mouth big, which is amazing with kids who appear to be apraxic, how hard that can be for them to do, you know?
Right, yeah.
One thing I'd say, where does it go in your mouth? Where, show me the hole. And then I make a big hole, you know, big, like I was going to say, you know, even if I don't say, you know, I just say, hole, and I make a big hole. And trying to watch kids who are apraxic have such a hard time with that in the beginning. And it just seems to me like that's got to be one of the easiest things, is to open your mouth. And the interesting thing is it's kids who can open their mouths when they're feeding themselves or when they're, you know, waiting for something to go in their mouth. But if you just give them the command and show them your mouth open, oftentimes they, even though you can see they're really trying, they struggle mm-hmm. to get their mouth open like that. And to me, that is definitely a red flag. If they can't do that by two, there's probably a motor planning component. So how in the world can you expect that child to turn around and say more or go? Or, you know, he doesn't have a clue how to open his mouth, you know, the way
right.
you're showing him, which is not hard for most kids, but it is for that
right.
child.
Right. And again, you're not going to want to do a ton of that outside of when it makes sense to do it in play.
Right.
Because otherwise they're going to really, really struggle with that. But you pair it with something fun in play, and it takes the focus off it, and they're
you
able
know,
to
like, you want this
make their body
fiddle,
do it.
Open your mouth and make a hole.
Yeah. Or I do it like he's scared. Like,
yeah.
Ooh, you know. Yeah, even if you're not doing the sound, you're just making the big eyes and, you know, making your lips in that little tight hole, almost like you would, you know, cover your mouth like, ooh. A lot of kids will imitate it that way. But when you start to give the verbal command, that can even mess some kids up. And I appreciate why you're doing it, and I would, you know, don't fix it if it's not broken. But even telling a kid sometimes, open your mouth like this, just uh-huh. assures that they won't be able to do it. So when a kid can't do it like that, go to where it's just kind of part of the play, and they don't, again, they don't even know they're doing it. And again, if you have a kid, if your child is doing lots of stuff like that, where he can do it in one context but not in another on request, I mean, that is a dead ringer for motor planning problems.
Right.
And read the articles on the website at teachmetotalk.com in the apraxia section. And the article that can give you more ideas, and this is for this mom, Marie, with more things for your child to imitate, is called Help, My Child Won't Imitate Words. And so type that up in the right-hand corner in the search bar on the website, just Help with an exclamation point after it, and then that article should pop up for you. I was going to try to see if I could get it to work while we're sitting here, but I'm so afraid I'm going to turn off the switchboard if I switch windows. Okay, it didn't really come up. I mean, you have to go. It's on the first page. It's about halfway down. But type Help in there, and just then move your cursor down to Help, My Child Won't Imitate Words. Read that article, because that will give you some more specific instructions for that. And I will tell you that my new book, which I'm hoping is out sometime this year, has a whole chapter on using those kinds of little things in the context of play and in the context of toys, and what kind of toys you can elicit those little I shouldn't call them pre-verbal. It should probably be called pre-word actions, or just, you know, movements with your mouth without sound. Again, doing some of those and then moving them to those little play words that we talked about. And then after she's had some practice with that, she'll be ready for real words. What's happening is she's just not there yet. You've got to put some other baby steps in between being able to sign and being able to go to real words. And that happens. Lots of children are this way. And truth be told, lots of therapists don't know how to fix that and don't know how to make that leap. So
right.
I'm hoping that those,
go straight to, we're just going to sit and try and do these oral motor exercises, and kids just sit there and do nothing because it's.
Or
really
run away
fun.
And cry.
Right. Run
yeah.
or look away because it's not appropriate and it's not productive. I don't think kids at that age have any clue what they're talking about. It's not fun. You know, the arousal level is way too low, and kids can't do it. And so they're setting the bar way too high and going about it in a very inappropriate way. But if you make it playful and fun, and you take those,
mm-hmm.
it's just like with our previous mom, Amy, she kind of needed that in-between step of, using the reduplicated syllables, kind of getting her daughter ready to go to two word phrases. Well, this little this mom needs to work on, okay, we can't go right up to the big words. What can we do? What's going to build her
right.
ability so that she can get to that word level and all those things?
Right.
That's what she needs.
And some kids tell you that they need this in-between step, because those are the kids you'll get on your caseload as a mom will say, well, he can do a car noise, or he can do five animal sounds.
Mm-hmm.
They are telling you with their behaviors that this is where I am developmentally, and this is where you need to help me, because this is what I've kind of learned how to do on my own. And so with therapy sessions like that, I'll think, okay, you can do two animal sounds. Let's see if today I can teach you five more. You know, let's start with where you are and see how we can expand right there at that little developmental level, and then work you toward words. Because, again, some therapists go straight for those words, and then they might stay there for months and months and months, and a kid not look like he's making any progress. But then on his own, he learns to copy the two new animal sounds that he hears on TV, or he hears his brother or his dad make a new sound kind of in the context of roughhousing, and then he adds that little sound. Haven't you had kids, Kate, that have had, you know, 25 different little sounds for things?
Laura, I had one years ago. I don't think I ever really talked to you about him. This kid, he could do the dishwasher, he could do the coffee maker, he could do the lawnmower, he could do every mechanical thing they had in their house, and he didn't have a word.
Yeah.
He made fast progress. He was, he was kind of ready when I got him, but he didn't have a word.
Right.
Boy, did he respond to your approach, because he took off. But, yeah, he was hilarious. I mean, every sound in the house he could do, and well.
And that's why when you get a kid that can do one or two, you think, okay, he's telling me where he needs to be for therapy. He's telling me what we need to do. And so many times therapists go straight for those other things, when if they would spend a few weeks on getting him just to learn how to imitate with those sounds that he can already do, or sounds that are really fun and different yet similar, they're going to make faster progress than if they just jump right in straight to words. And so she's doing a good thing by trying to get her to say the words that she can already sign. And, boy, we use that all the time. So many times the first words that a kid will say to us are more or eat or something that or try to, you know, ooh, for cookie. Try to do something that we've signed first. And so she's on the right track. She's just got to back it down a step or two. But in her defense, she didn't know to do that. And again, a lot of therapists don't know to do that. So I hope that those ideas will help Marie with her child. I don't think she says if it's a boy or a girl, but hopefully Marie will write us back in another month or two and tell us that those ideas really helped. So that would be good. I hope so. All right, parting words for today, Kate.
Is this a new segment you forgot to tell me about?
No. Do you have anything to say before we wrap up the show?
No, I don't think I do.
Well, next week we will be one more week closer to your house being done. That's
Woo-hoo!
The new mantra.
And one more week close, 1 week closer to Kisha. But now that you've done the Louisville thing, that's no longer a big deal. I mean, it's a big deal.
Oh, I'm excited about Kisha.
I know, but
yeah,
you don't have to stress
the nerves,
about it.
Yeah. Yeah, the nerves are done. I'm very excited. That's going to be a fun, fun morning. And just talking about receptive language there, it's not the same as a regular conference. It's about an hour's worth of the same information and 2 hours kind of have expanded, and newer studies that I've found and a little better explanation of some of those things. And we'll talk about more specific hierarchy for receptive language, because if a kid doesn't understand words, he's not ready to talk. And again, this is something that so many parents don't understand because the therapists don't explain it and don't really kind of internalize that knowledge themselves. So we're going to talk about that, how to make that work, how to make that important for parents, and why they will start to recognize, okay, I've got to do this first, and this is a process, and this is how I'm going to be able to get my kid to talk. So I'm very excited about that presentation. I can't wait. And you helped me pick out my most favorite outfit ever to wear that day, so I'm so excited.
I'm so happy I was a part of that.
The fashion advice. Yes,
oh, yes.
Very important. All right. Okay. That's it for today. We'll be back next Sunday, 6 o'clock. Join us.
Thanks, Laura. Bye.